Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Well, good evening and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I am Wags, joined alongside by Scott Tobin. And boy, man, it's been a heck of a week so far. We have the MLB lockout that is now in effect. We've got the Blues that have been in action shorthanded, as we'll talk a little bit about that tonight. The NFL is in the middle of week 13, wrapping up with the Bills and Patriots tonight, and what can only be considered a weather delay kind of game. And then the Final Four in the college football playoffs have been set. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. But first off, Scott, how are you doing tonight, man?
Crazy day, man. Crazy day. I just actually ran in the house and sat down. I've been up running around since about 5:30 this morning. So I'm just ready to sit down and talk some sports with you, although I don't really know what happened today. But we'll get into it and we'll make it a good show, right?
Oh, most definitely we're going to have a good show. Like I said, plenty of stuff to talk about. And just because Major League Baseball is in a lockout doesn't mean there's other things going on. We also have some college basketball to talk about as well. Illinois gets a big win tonight in Iowa. SLU's getting ready to host Creighton tomorrow night as well. So lots of stuff to talk about. But we got to first start off with probably the big news here in St. Louis, at least, and that's the St. Louis Blues and the fact that they are, needless to say, playing shorthanded. There are a lot of issues going on with the St. Louis Blues right now in regards to COVID, in regards to injuries, and the cap situation. And, yeah, the Blues are not the only team that's had to deal with the COVID cap and how things play out in regards to that. But because we're feeling it here in St. Louis, we are thinking it's the worst thing in the entire world. And today, Robert Thomas goes down with an injury. He's got a lower body injury. He's going to be day-to-day. He is not going to be playing tomorrow night against Florida. And because of that COVID cap situation with Binnington and Falk and Bozak on that list, Blues cannot call anybody up from the minors. So tomorrow night, they're going to be going with just 17 skaters. Something we saw Vegas have to do last year, not because of COVID, but mainly because of the fact that they paid a whole bunch of players too much money and couldn't afford to field an entire team. But because of everything going on right now, the Blues are only going to have 17 tomorrow. And that's a big blow considering Robert Thomas is the second leading scorer on this Blues team with 22 points. Going up against the top team in the East in the Florida Panthers, we saw what they did on Saturday, 51 shots against by the Panthers. The Blues were able to get a point out of that, but now being down Thomas as well, it's going to be a tough task tomorrow night for the Blues.
Yeah, it really is. You know, like you said, they've had a lot of stuff go wrong. You know, we've seen the COVID thing hit them. We've seen injuries hit them. You know, it's just weird. You know, something that we said a lot during baseball season when the Cardinals went through that stretch is you just want to keep your head above water right now. You know, and that's what the Blues just have to do. They have to tread water, keep their heads above water, and know that in a couple of weeks, some of these guys will be back and they'll get reinforcements. And you just kind of have to man the ship right now and try to keep it from taking too much water and starting to sink basically for the next couple of weeks until you can get some of these guys back.
And I've told people this the last couple of days that this is actually probably the best time for this to happen. Not that there's ever a good time for this to happen, but this is the best time for it to happen because they're going to be at home. It's a 4-game home stretch starting tomorrow night, but they're also playing against Eastern Conference teams for the most part. So a loss or a game going into overtime isn't going to drastically affect the standings it would be if you go up against a Western Conference or even a Central Division opponent. They've got Florida, then Detroit, then Montreal, and then they wrap up against Anaheim. So that Anaheim game is probably the most important one out of the four, but like you said, you kind of have to just tread water. You have to try and get as many points as you possibly can against these teams, but you don't have to feel like you're at a complete loss if you don't win these games because they're not, in a sense, going to affect the standings. Get what you can and hope for these guys to come back, but really just a matter of stay healthy. Stay healthy for these next four games, and then when these guys come back, you can start pushing forward once again.
Yeah, and the COVID thing, you know, it's crazy in the NHL. Because most of these guys that are tested positive are asymptomatic, they're fine. It's just kind of the way that the COVID protocol is in the NHL, and it's something they're going to have to take a look at and reevaluate. I don't know if you're able to do that this season or not, or if you just have to grit your teeth and bear through it this year and then pray that we don't have any of these issues going into next season.
You almost have to. I mean, the NBA doesn't test unless a player is actually showing symptoms. You know, you've got the stuff going on in the NFL, not a whole lot of issues going on there. Obviously, Major League Baseball is not in session right now, but it does beg the question, you know, when does the NHL look at changing their structure on things? I mean, it has to be a players union and management co-agreement, essentially. They have to agree that they need to change these things. And I don't see that happening with the COVID cap. I don't think they're going to eventually sit there and say, okay, the guys that are on the COVID list don't count against the cap. You can bring guys up. I don't think that's going to be something they're going to be able to work out during the season. But I think maybe if they talk about potentially rolling back the amount of testing that's going on and maybe only testing if a player is showing symptoms, that could be something that's resolved. But with the new potential variant out there, the Omicron variant, which, by the way, every time I hear that, all I can think of is Futurama and Lure Omicron Percy I-8. With that being out there, I don't know if the NHL will want to pursue that option and risk potentially an outbreak that cancels most or some of the season. I don't know if that's going to be something that's going to happen. But, you know, do you think that they might actually start exploring that if they haven't already had those talks?
I mean, I think you have to. What did I hear today? 98% of the league is vaccinated. You know, and these guys are not sick. You know, they are testing positive, but they're not sick. And they're having to sit out 10 days. And it's kind of screwing up your product. It's screwing up what you're putting out on the ice. It would be one thing if, you know, if this was last year and you had massive outbreaks everywhere and everybody was sick. But, you know, when you have basically healthy guys and pretty much everybody vaccinated, it doesn't make sense to keep doing this when you're hurting your product and everything else. So I think it's something that they definitely need to look at. Again, whether it's something they're able to evaluate and change during their season at this point, you know, we're in December already, you know, whether that's something they're willing to do now or if, like I said, they just gut through it and then hope and pray that you don't have any issues going into next year. You know, and I wonder, you know, we know how strict Canada was with all of their protocols. You know, I don't know what's going on in Canada necessarily right now, so I don't know how much of it has to do with, you know, things going on up there that's allowing teams to be able to play at home and stuff as well.
Well, it seems like we might be having some technical difficulties. I know the internet has been up and down and spotty in my area a whole lot. So we'll give it here another couple seconds, see if we can kind of get this back close to some sort of normalcy. So Scott, if you can hear me, hang tight for just a second. We'll see if we can get this back up and rolling.
Okay.
All right, can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay, I got a bit of a delay, but go ahead and recap what you were just saying there for me.
Again, you know, I was just saying, you're talking about the league trying to reevaluate their COVID protocols. And I said, I'm not really sure how much of that has to do with Canada. You know, we know how strict their rules were last year with allowing teams back in there. So I don't really know what's going on with COVID in our neighbors to the north, whether that has some impact on how they're doing things and what kind of an impact that would have on whether the league would reevaluate things or not as well.
Yeah, I don't know if they will reevaluate, like you said, because of the Canada thing. You know, James Neal did return to practice today. He still has to be on the IR, though, because he is going to miss those 10 games because of it, because he's on LTIR, not just a regular injured list. So he is back to skating, but not fully back with the team. Now, Tarasenko did not skate today. They said it was a maintenance day, so more than likely he will be back tomorrow to play, just giving him the amount of time to rest and recoup, because these guys are going to have to go a little bit harder tomorrow, a little bit longer. You're going to have more shifts, extended shifts, things that, you know, a normal team is not used to going through, because you're going to be down a player, essentially. You're going to have 17 out there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. We'll probably see Jake Walman up on the wing tomorrow as well. He's had a game out at the forward position already this year, so we'll see what he can bring. He did score a goal on Saturday against the Panthers in that shootout loss, and we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, like, despite the setbacks, three of six available points they've been able to collect in this little bit of stretch against the Eastern Conference. And if they can get one or two tomorrow night against the Panthers, I think they'll consider that a win. And then you start getting some of these guys back. David Perron is slowly getting back. Craig Berube said today at practice that, you know, he's starting to look good, but with an injury like that, you know, especially with a guy that's dealing with concussion symptoms and concussion in his past, you can't really tell until he feels ready. And we haven't really heard much from David Perron himself. So until we hear that, you almost have to back away and say, okay, let's wait to see, you know, what he's wanting to do and how he recoups. It's just a matter of getting through this is what it is. Like you said earlier, it's treading water. It's making sure you don't totally sink, but just keep yourself in a position that when the guys do come back, you're ready to go and go full tilt here on out, because it's going to be a little bit of a stretch between now and the beginning of February. And if the Olympic players go to play in the Olympics, you'll have that break. And if not, you're going to have about a month off between games. So you have to really make sure you get the points you can now to, you know, in case you have that slow start coming out of that Olympic break, you have kind of banked some stuff to kind of give yourself that ability to kind of get back into your game.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That it's going to be really interesting to see how everything plays out with the Olympics. Is there was some news coming out of there today about the possibility of the, you know, at least politically, the U.S. is going to boycott. You know, they're not going to send representatives and that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see if U.S. athletes are allowed to go, or if our athletes boycott as well. So that'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. And, you know, you talk about the Blues, and, you know, again, we can kind of go back and kind of reference them to the Cardinals, and you talked about being ready to go when everybody comes back. And like we said, all you got to do is look at that Cardinal team and look what they did when they finally got everybody healthy. They went on a 17-game winning streak. So even the Blues are definitely capable of that. We saw what they did at the beginning of the season. So just stay in striking distance, get everybody back, and maybe we talk about another. Wouldn't that be crazy if the Blues go on some insane winning streak then after they get everybody back?
Well, I'll be honest. Mike Yeo just got named head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, so I would make sure to watch out. If he gets fired, they might go on a run. So be careful there. Yes, Mike Yeo is back in the head coaching ranks. Philadelphia fired their head coach, Alain Vigneault, earlier today and brought up Mike Yeo. And also over in Vancouver, they completely cleaned house up there in Vancouver with the Canucks. Fired everybody, GM, assistant GM, head coach, everybody. Bruce Boudreau is now in Vancouver now as the head coach. So we'll see how things play out there as well. So it's getting to the point now you're starting to see a little bit of a fire sale. You're starting to see teams go, okay, this is the point where we have to make a change so we can make a run. And this is what's going to happen. Thankfully, right now, the Blues are in a decent spot with where they sit at, and that doing that all with very few of their normal players. I think they've only had their starting lineup together just a couple of games. So the fact that they're at where they're at right now with the players that they have missed so far, it does give you hope that when these guys do come back, they can go on a run like the Cardinals did this past year and put some stuff together and possibly make that run to another Stanley Cup championship. I mean, it's definitely a hard trophy to win. There's a reason why the Blues didn't win it the first 50 plus years that they were in existence, even though they were in the finals the first 3 years. It's a hard cup to win. It's a hard championship to win. And you think that a team in a season like this could also galvanize a team and bring them together. So it's going to be real, real fun to see how that plays out going down the stretch. And all that really kind of gets underway again tomorrow night as the Blues host the Florida Panthers at home, beginning of a 4-game homestand. With three games against Eastern Conference opponents, including former Blues goaltender Jake Allen, when Montreal comes to town later this week. So make sure you check that out. All right, now let's jump over into the NFL because, well, the picks were a little bit better this week for us. We ended up doing decently well in most of the games that we picked this week. Both of us were over 500, Scott, so kudos to us. We did better this week. Dallas did us a favor, barely, when they beat New Orleans, a team that's dropped five straight. But, you know, kind of looking at the schedule and the rundown of games this past week, which victory was the one that surprised you the most? And don't say the Lions, because we know that's number one. But what is the most surprising game of the past week for you?
I think you have to look at Pittsburgh and Baltimore. I think that has to be a big one because, you know, everybody was kind of writing off the Steelers, you know, the rumors came out, you know, right as we hit the weekend, that Ben Roethlisberger was telling everybody that this was probably it. You know, a lot of the national media was saying, you know, another week or two and he's going to be on the bench and they're going to look at Dwayne Haskins and, you know, they're going to be out of contention and Ben's starting days are probably over and the Steelers start to reevaluate what they have going into next year. And then you see him come out and, you know, while they struggled early, he throws a couple of big touchdowns and looks a little bit like vintage Ben Roethlisberger down the stretch of that game. And the Steelers jump in there and Pittsburgh's still in the playoff hunt. You know, I think that's a huge one. One that, you know, we kind of thought could go back and forth, but was that Cincinnati Chargers game was an interesting game too, because the Chargers get out to that big lead. Then Cincinnati comes roaring back and the Chargers almost blow the lead. And then the Chargers end up taking off again and, you know, putting that game out of reach. What they won 41-22, I think was the final, something like that. So, you know, that was kind of surprising because a lot of people were wondering if the Chargers were done. You know, the NFL is just weird, man. We talk about it all the time. Seattle beating San Francisco. I didn't see that happening. So, you know, there's just a lot of stuff. I still don't know. You know, you look at the NFL and you say, who's going to be in the playoffs? Who's going to be the number one seeds? We're down to, what, 5 weeks till the playoffs start? And I have no idea who's going to be in the playoffs, period, much less who are going to be the top seeds in both conferences.
Well, and surprisingly enough, the Lions, who just won their first game this past week against Minnesota, somehow they are still mathematically alive for the playoffs. So that tells you right there how crazy it is. Yet the two-win Houston Texans have been eliminated officially from the playoffs. But the team that's in the same conference, the same division as them, the Jacksonville Jaguars at two wins, are still mathematically alive for the playoffs. So it is anybody's guess as to how this is going to play out. You know, teams that are up at the top, I think if you look at the top, maybe three or four teams in each conference, I think you can confidently say that those four teams are probably going to end up there. I mean, as confidently, I guess, as you can say that they're going to be. I mean, I think Arizona is legitimately a team that's a threat that can potentially go all the way this year. They got their players back, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, yesterday, healthy after a couple of weeks absence, and then the bye week, which is another great week for them to get healthy. I mean, you look at the Patriots and Bills, they're playing right now, and an 11-10 Patriots lead in the third quarter, a game that saw the Patriots attempt one pass in the first half because of the conditions up in Buffalo, yet they hold an 11-10 lead. I think both of those teams have the ability to be up at the top as the season gets near the end. You know, outside of that, I mean, Green Bay, I think mainly just because of the division they're in, same thing with Tampa. I think it's almost a lock that we know that they're going to be there as well. They may not be one of the top four teams when the playoffs start, but I think right now, because of the divisions they play in, they are going to be there at the end of the day. I mean, outside of that, though, it's definitely hard to tell, because Dallas at 8-4 seems like they're sitting in a comfortable position, but Washington's won four straight. They've got two games against the Washington football team here in the next couple of weeks, so that entire division can flip-flop very quickly. You know, we talked about Arizona. I think that's a pretty safe bet they're going to be there, although the Rams are continuing to play halfway decent right now. They're sitting just a couple games back, but I believe they have one more game left against Arizona. Kansas City, I think, has probably taken a stranglehold on that AFC West, only from the simple fact that they have a few games remaining against the West, so they can distance themselves here in the next couple of weeks. And the defense has been playing outstanding. I think there was a stat out there that said since week six, the team that's allowed the least amount of points in the NFL, Kansas City. And that's something that I don't think any of us would believe.
No, although, you know, you look at the Chiefs the last few years, and that's kind of been Spags' trademark. They start off defensively really bad the first half of the season, and then they get better. The thing that's so weird about the Chiefs is that their offense is so out of sync. You know, Patrick Mahomes looks horrible. I mean, even when they're winning, he looks bad. You know, Travis Kelce just not played well all year. The Chiefs' defense has played a lot better, and they're definitely the reason why they're 8-4 at this point. I don't know if you get into a playoff game, though, against a Buffalo or even a team like the Colts, for instance, or the Patriots. I'm not sure that the Chiefs' defense is good enough to get them that win if their offense doesn't straighten out. And I don't see their offense getting straightened out this year. I think they're going to have – it's going to take an offseason and some real deep evaluation of what they're doing offensively before this offensive gets back in a rhythm.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sold on the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they – like you said, the defense has been there and been very, very good. But that offense, I mean, I was going into last night in my fantasy game. I needed Tyreek Hill to outscore the Chiefs defense by just 3 points. All I had to do was outscore the Chiefs defense by 3 points. The Chiefs doubled him up at least last night, and I ended up losing my fantasy game because the Chiefs defense scored more points than a player on the Chiefs offense. And that's something that you just don't see happening very often with the Chiefs. And, you know, I want to touch on Indianapolis real quick. You brought them up, and they're sitting at 7-6. So most people are going to be like, oh, man, they're sitting at 7-6. I mean, they're an okay team. But you got to look at, you know, how they've lost in some of these games. I mean, they had the Bucs on the rope last week. I picked the Colts to win last week, and I thought they very well could have and should have beaten the Colts. They obliterated the Bills a couple of weeks ago, 41-15. They lost to the Titans in overtime. Outside of they lost to the Ravens in overtime, and then they lost their other game to the Titans by 9 points. So I look at the Colts and I go, you know, the record doesn't necessarily dictate how good they actually probably are. And Carson Wentz has stayed relatively healthy, knock on wood. I don't want to jinx him before they play the Patriots next week, which will probably end up being a loss because the Patriots for some reason are back to their winning ways. But they do have a very tough schedule coming up: Patriots, Cardinals, then they host the Raiders and wrap up with the Jags, which is a relatively easy game there. But that's a tough three-game stretch, and it's really going to make or break where we end up seeing the Colts at the end of the day. I mean, they're not in any danger of falling to third place in the AFC South with both of their opponents behind them at 2-10, but they could set themselves up nicely in one of those mid wild card spots. And I'd like to see the Colts in the playoffs and maybe do a little damage.
Yeah. And, you know, don't totally rule out the Colts winning that division with all the injuries that Tennessee has right now, you know, and the Colts are finally getting healthy. T.Y. Hilton hasn't been healthy all year. He's getting closer. Like you said, Carson Wentz was a little banged up early, but Carson Wentz has actually played really well this year. You know, after missing, you know, being kind of in and out the first couple of weeks of the season, he's played really well. The Colts are going to be a scary team. You know, they can run the ball really well. They play pretty good defense. They get in, they're going to be tough. The AFC, like I said, you know, the AFC I think is still really up for grabs. There's a bunch of teams that could still get in. And the seeding-wise is, you know, completely up for grabs. Like you said, the NFC, you look at it and you say, okay, you pretty much know that the Cardinals, the Rams, the Bucs, and the Packers are the four best teams in the NFC. You know, does Dallas hold on and win that East? Maybe. But even if they do, I don't think Dallas or Washington, either one, is on the same level as those other four. And I did put the Rams in that four because I think they are one of the four best teams because of the talent they have. So, you know, at least there you have a defined four teams. You know, again, you talk about the AFC, and you can go, okay, the Chiefs, no wait, the Patriots, no wait, the Bills, no wait, the Titans, no wait, Baltimore. A couple of weeks ago, everybody was talking about Baltimore. You know, the Steelers and Cleveland are still in it. You know, I mean, the Raiders are still hanging around. You know, there's a lot of look at Miami. Look what the Dolphins have done all of a sudden. The Dolphins are right there banging on the door all of a sudden. So, you know, the next couple of weeks are going to be really interesting in the AFC.
Well, yeah, talk about the Dolphins. They've won 5 straight games. That's matching the Kansas City Chiefs streak right now. And you know, who would have thought that the Dolphins were sitting at 1-7 would go on a 5-game win streak? And you know, looking at it, it's wins against, you know, maybe some lowly teams. Obviously, they've taken advantage: Giants, Panthers, Jets, Texans. But they also beat the Ravens a couple weeks ago as well, and they beat them pretty soundly, 22-10. So it's not like this Dolphins team is that bad of a team. They started off a little rough. They beat the Patriots in week one, so that was a bit of a surprise, and then they got blown out by the Bills after that. But they've got a tough little bit of a schedule at the end, but you know, they can probably win a couple more games. They got the Jets and Saints coming up in the next 2 weeks. All of a sudden that 6-7 team could be an 8-17 going into their matchup against the Titans. Like you said, with the injuries the Titans have suffered this year, that may not be an easy win for Tennessee there. And all of a sudden you could see the Dolphins fighting for that top of the AFC East as well, which is a huge surprise. And that last game against the Patriots could very well be a division championship type of game.
Well, and here's the thing. You look at the Dolphins, and, you know, everybody was ready to run Tua out of town. All of a sudden, he's kind of gotten into a rhythm. He's starting to feel more comfortable. And then, you know, you can say, oh, he's a second-year quarterback. He hasn't played all that well. But, you know, if they get into a playoff push, is that pressure going to really bother him? Because we got to remember that Tua played at Alabama. He's used to playing in huge, big pressure, big moment games. You know, remember, he came in and off the bench as a freshman and won the national championship in the second half. You know, I mean, he's got that in him. So the moment's not going to be too big for him. And the Dolphins could surprise some people. They really could.
That's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And now we've got to talk about that Detroit Lions victory yesterday. And, you know, a lot of people are sitting there going, oh, we're surprised. Can't believe the Lions won, blah, blah, blah. Yes, it was against Minnesota, a team that, you know, frequently blows games. But I'll be perfectly honest. I thought the Lions had a chance to win the last couple of weeks. I mean, they're 1-2-1 in their last four games, but that includes a tie against the Steelers, and they lost their other two games by a combined 5 points. I mean, this Lions team, they're not a sexy team when it comes to scoring points. Obviously, Jared Goff is not probably the quarterback you really want leading a team, but Dan Campbell has gotten the most out of this Lions team, and you can really feel – you can feel the commitment and the desire that Dan Campbell has for leading this team. And I was beyond ecstatic to see him get that victory and then for him to dedicate that win to the people of Oxford. I mean, once again, just shows you the class act that Dan Campbell is. And I mean, I'm going to root for the Lions the rest of the way this year. I can't believe that, but I'm going to root for Detroit.
Yeah. And, you know, the Lions have been pretty much in every game they played in. You know, when you look at it, you go back and you look at some of the games they played, there have been a bunch of games where, like, the first half, they're blown out, they're down by 20, and then the next thing you know, you turn around, and they're within 3 points. Like, all of a sudden, they've come back, and they're right there, and they've done it all year long. They're not as bad of a football team as their record shows. I mean, they've been in pretty much every game they've played all year long at some point. You know, and they've missed a couple of field goals late in games that has cost them. You know, they should have won the Thanksgiving game. You know, they've definitely played better than the record shows. And like you said, they're definitely building towards something. And I really like the all-silver that they were wearing on Sunday, too. The all-gray uniforms look pretty sharp, actually.
That they did. You can't say that the Lions never, ever not look good. I mean, even the all-blue with the silver helmet, silver pants look with no logo. I mean, there's so many great Detroit Lions uniforms. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Barry Sanders looked good in all of them, and he looked good in every game he played in, so that helps as well. But those Lions uniforms are phenomenal. I love the ones that they had on Sunday. And then you have to look at the flip side, and you have to look at the Minnesota Vikings, and you have to sit there and just go, really? I mean, not only did you blow a lead and lose to Detroit and give them their first win, but that's after you yourself came back from a double-digit deficit and ended up taking the lead in that game. And it's not Kirk Cousins. I mean, the dude was 30 of 40, 340 yards, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. He did everything he probably needed to do to win that game. Yet this team just for some reason chokes at every possible turn. I mean, they had a bunch of penalties, 8 penalties for 66 yards, so that definitely hurt a little bit as well. But, I mean, what can you say about Minnesota when you can't necessarily point to one specific thing? Because that team, they also won almost every team category in the stats department as well. Turnovers, yards, first down. I mean, everything was in Minnesota's favor, yet they found some way to come back from a deficit, take the lead, and blow the lead against a team that hadn't won all year.
You know what that says to me? It's a coaching issue. You know, when you're, like you said, you can't blame Kirk Cousins, because if you look at Kirk Cousins' numbers, he's actually having a really good year. You know, and you look around and you're like, how are they not better? You know, Thielen's had a really good year. You know, both of their wide receivers have had good years. The running back has had a good year when he's been healthy. He's been banged up a little bit, but, you know, he's played well. Their defense hasn't been awful. I think it might be time for a coaching change. You know, just look at the last play of that game. How? Last play of the game against the Lions team that, like you said, has found a way to lose so many times this year with 2 seconds left. How are you not blitzing Jared Goff there? How are you not sending pressure? How are you playing back and letting him have time to throw that ball? I mean, that he should be fired right there.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been long enough. You've seen what you need to see, and it's time for a change in Minnesota. And you have to look and sit there and say they did everything that they could to spend money to secure a quarterback, to build. Now, the defense has been kind of up and down the last couple of years after their domination a few years ago, but it's still a very solid defense. I don't know if they've necessarily solved the kicking game with Greg Joseph, but he has been decently solid this year. I mean, there's been a couple of misses, but for the most part, the kicking woes haven't really like reared their ugly heads this year. It just seems like the culture, like you said, is just a losing mentality. Whether they're winning or losing games anyway, it's a losing mentality there. It's always like the what's a mistake are we going to make this week and how are we going to have to recover from it? That's the feeling like it is in Minnesota. And you have to make a change. And I think you're probably going to see a change after this season, regardless of how they end up this year. Even if they make the playoffs, I think you're probably going to see some sort of change going forward up in Minnesota. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, it's been a wild, interesting season so far. Keeping a track on this Bills-Patriots game. I know it's getting ready to head into the fourth quarter. And looking at the score, I believe it's still 11-10. No, I'm sorry, it's 14-10 Patriots right now. So somehow or another, they were able to kick a field goal. So congratulations, Patriots, on kicking a field goal in the wind in Buffalo. Did you see the video of what it was like there before the game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, trying to kick a field goal in that stadium or even throw the ball in that stadium in November and December is always tough. But today was especially treacherous. And, you know, I'm sure that the teams had plenty of time to prepare because they've been talking about all weekend how bad the weather was going to be tonight. So, and you know, if there's one thing Bill Belichick is good at, it's gaming and being prepared for the elements in his team and having his team ready for whatever. So hopefully Buffalo can come back and win this game, though, because I really don't want the Bills to be I really don't want the Patriots to be the number one seed in the AFC. I really don't.
Yeah, we both picked the Bills to win this game anyway. Mac Jones still has just attempted and completed the one pass. So we're in the fourth quarter. Patriots, one pass attempt. It was completed for 12 yards. Josh Allen, 9 of 18, 83 yards and a touchdown. The thing this right here will show you, I think, a little bit about the difference between the Patriots and the Bills. You know, like you said, both of these teams knew what they were getting into coming into this game because of the weather reports and everything that was going down, and they were able to see what was coming ahead of them. And right now, here's the differential in the rushing yardage right now. Harris for the Patriots, 111 yards on 10 carries. He also has a touchdown tonight. Zach Moss, 6 carries for 18 yards, leads the Bills. That should tell you all you need to know about the way this game is going and really the way both these teams have been built as well. You know, the Bills just have not been able to get the run game going, and the Patriots have. And that's a testament, I think, to what Bill Belichick has done there. And whatever you want to say about the past and how they won championships, you're seeing it. We talked about this last week. You're seeing what Bill Belichick is, and you're seeing what Tom Brady is, and you're seeing what they are apart. And you almost have to sit back and go, well, screw it. We might have just been wrong about both of those guys in a sense. I don't think we were completely off on them, but you take away the cheating aspects of it, and they actually are probably a really good coach and game manager and a really good quarterback.
Oh, they are. There's no question that they are. But, you know, there's just so many other things that goes along with Bill Belichick, you know, and that's never going to go away. That's just his reputation. Plus, just his personality in general, you know, rubs so many people the wrong way. You know, he's just so unwilling to open up, so dry, so, you know, just has no personality that, you know, he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And some of the things that he did, you know, like when he got the Jets job and then didn't really let them know that he wasn't taking it. They had the press conference scheduled and didn't know where he was as he was in New England taking the Patriots. I mean, that's just pretty unprofessional. You know, we saw his protege, McDaniel, do the exact same thing to the Colts a couple of years ago. So, you know, definitely, definitely cut a bird or branch off the same tree there, you could say, I guess, with those two. But yeah, I mean, he is a good coach, and you know, they're a good football team, but hopefully they don't win tonight.
Yeah, yeah, we'll keep track of that game as we go on the rest of the way here. Major League Baseball, they're in the lockout right now, but we did get some really, really good news yesterday when it comes to the baseball and really the Hall of Fame, because they announced a bunch of players getting in. You had, you know, Bud Fowler with the Veterans Committee getting in, Tony Oliva, Gil Hodges, Jim Catt, Minnie Minoso finally got in. But the big one, and the one that I still cannot believe it's taken this long to accomplish, Buck O'Neill finally gets into the Hall of Fame. And we had a chance to visit the Negro League Baseball Museum and Hall of Fame this past summer. And this was something that Buck O'Neill was passionate about. He helped build and create in the Kansas City area, spent his career in Kansas City with the Monarchs before moving on to Major League Baseball and the coaching ranks. And we got a chance to walk through there and really see and feel the impact of the Negro Leagues and really what Buck O'Neill meant to Kansas City and to that museum and that staff there as well. And to hear the president of the NLBM, Bob Kendrick, yesterday, just really talking about the legacy and just the excitement around the fact that Buck was going into the Hall of Fame. You could just feel the relief and the hard work that they put in to get this to be something that happened, because, you know, back when Buck was alive, the Negro League committee was formed to get guys recognized in the Hall of Fame. Everybody thought he was going to be a lock, a shoo-in to get into the Hall of Fame at that point, and he didn't. He was not one of the 17 players that were initially elected to that Hall of Fame in that class, and yet he still was the guy, and this is coming from an ESPN report, you know, he was still the guy that introduced all these guys because they were all deceased at the time, and it was all about the guys getting in. It wasn't about him. And then he passed away 2 days later. And it was a real shame that he was not able to go in while he was alive. But Buck O'Neill is in the Hall of Fame now, and it couldn't have happened at a better time. And I'm, for one, excited for the celebration that's going to come from that.
Yeah, no, like you said, Buck O'Neill, huge. Like you said, you know, so influential in getting the Negro League Baseball Museum together, getting it going, you know, creating what they've done there in Kansas City, making it such a neat place. You know, again, we've talked about this many times, but if you've not been there, you know, and you're in the Kansas City area, if you go to a Cardinals Royals game, if you're out there for the weekend or anytime you're in that area, just go stop by, because it is very, very cool, and you'll learn a lot, and it's a neat place. We had a blast from there. Go back and watch our show that we did from the Negro League Museum, you know, with Dr. Ray Doswell and Mike Claiborne and everybody this summer. And just a really neat place. And Buck O'Neill, a great guy. And, of course, not only does he have the amazing ties with Kansas City and the Monarchs and the Royals, as you know, he had his own seat at Kauffman Stadium that he still has, you know, that the Royals, you know, kind of do a raffle that somebody gets to sit in the Buck O'Neill seat every night. Also has some ties to the Cardinals. If it wasn't for Buck O'Neill, there would be no Lou Brock. He found him. He signed him, of course, to the Cubs. But he was the scout that discovered Lou Brock. So Buck O'Neill definitely has some ties to the Cardinals and spent a lot of time in St. Louis raising money and bringing awareness to the Negro League Museum when he was trying to get that started. So I am with you, very, very excited about that for him and for Bob Kendrick and for Ray Doswell, who we've gotten to know pretty well the last couple of years. And those guys have all been really, really kind to us with their time and allowing us to do stuff, and really happy for all of them. I am disappointed, though. Jim Catt got in, like you said, who was a part of the 1982 Cardinals World Series. Two guys that huge parts of the Cardinal family that are not in, and it's just an absolute shame that they're not. Why they're not, I don't know. One of them is the captain, Kenny Boyer. You know, Kenny Boyer was one of the best players in baseball in the 60s. No reason in the world why he's not in there yet. And the other one, you know, is a baseball legend. He broke the hollowed home run record in 1961. How Roger Maris is not in the Hall of Fame is, again, an absolute shame. I mean, you know, just he should be there, you know, from the numbers that he put up. I know he didn't do it for a long, long time. He was, you know, he didn't put the power numbers up for a long, long time, but he was a very consistent player with the Royals, with the Yankees, and then with the Cardinals. You know, and he should be in just for the amount of World Series that he played in. You know, he was there with the Yankees in the early 60s. You know, played against the Cardinals in 64, and then came to the Cardinals and was part of those 67, 68 teams here, you know, plus being in the Royals with the Royals in Kansas City in the late 50s, you know, just a really, really solid player, won three American League MVP awards, you know, three MVPs, two batting titles, broke the all-time home run record and isn't in the Hall of Fame. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
It doesn't. And, you know, honestly, and you take this how you will because of the stuff surrounding it, but the three men that have broken the home run record are not in the Hall of Fame. Roger Maris, Mark McGwire, and Barry Bonds. None of them are in the Hall of Fame for various reasons. And that argument is still going on between the two latter guys and McGwire and Bonds. And, you know, the argument for me is, you know, Barry Bonds, I think probably legitimately does deserve to be in the Hall of Fame pre San Francisco, really, really the pre home run race, pre 98. I think what he did in Pittsburgh and in his early years in San Francisco were enough to get him into the Hall of Fame. It's just now that everything has come to light, he's kind of been tarnished by that. And I think you could almost say the same thing about McGwire as well. Prior to 98, you know, the stuff he did in his rookie season with Oakland and everything that he did leading up to that time frame were probably Hall of Fame worthy. And they just, for some reason, have been stymied by the era that they played in, unfortunately. And, you know, maybe they didn't help themselves. Don't get me wrong. They didn't help themselves by displaying things and getting caught and things like that. But, you know, it's hard to imagine a Hall of Fame without three guys that broke the home run barrier in different ways, shapes, or forms. But Maris is definitely a glaring omission, and I still don't know why even the Veterans Committee hasn't found a way to get him in.
Yeah, it like I said, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, you know, there's some people in New York that are still mad that he's the one that broke that record and not Mickey Mantle. You know, and if you ever want to see how that really went down, the movie 61 that Billy Crystal made, you know, in the early 2000s is an amazing movie. That's just a great, great movie. It really tells that story about both of those guys, but go check that out. And everything that Roger Maris went through, including the fact that he was so stressed out that his hair was literally falling out. But yeah, you know, Roger should be in, you know, from everything that you've heard, just a great guy, you know, besides being an excellent ball player, great family man, great person. His teammates loved him. It's weird to me that he's not in. You talk about, real quickly, talking about Barry Bonds. I'm not sure that Barry Bonds would have gotten in, even if there were no steroids, just because of how Barry Bonds was. He rubbed so many people the wrong way. I mean, he would have eventually gotten in, but, you know, there were so many people, sports writers, media people, coaches, managers, players, that hated. I mean, Jack Buck couldn't stand him. And for Jack Buck to literally admit that he couldn't stand somebody, you know, that didn't happen. But Barry was able to rub Jack Buck the wrong way. And in saying all that, I had the opportunity to meet Barry as a little kid and actually stood in a – rode in an elevator with him and have his autograph, and he actually talked to us. He had his sunglasses on and was as cocky as hell, but still talked to us and was nice. But yeah, Barry rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, so I'm not sure that he would be in either way. And then as far as Mark, you know, I still think Mark should be in, because like you said, he's up until, I guess, last year, he had the rookie home run record. You know, he was rookie home run record. He was rookie of the year. Played on three straight World Series teams in Oakland with Canseco and Ricky Anderson and Tony and those guys in the late 80s. And then, you know, what he did with the Cardinals. And, you know, I've said this a million times. You can take all the steroids you want. You still have to have the hand-eye coordination to be able to hit the ball and do what you did. And, you know, again, go back and look what Mark was doing in 1987 before, when he was half the size that he was in 2000. You know, in 98, in 99, and 2000, you go back to that 87 year, he was not scrawny, but he was not a big guy. And he was hitting 49, 50 home runs then. I mean, he did it at USC in college. He was a special player. And there's a reason that baseball has embraced him back and let him coach and let him be as involved as he is, because he did admit that he did something wrong and then, you know, wanted to kind of make amends for it. And that's something, again, another reason why Barry's not in, because he's never going to do that.
Well, you have to look at McGwire's swing too. I mean, if you pair his 87-88 seasons with his, you know, 2000, even 98 seasons, the stance, the swing, all that for the most part is the same. Oh, and yeah. That right there tells you that you know, the steroids may have been used to hit the ball farther, but it wasn't about making a contact. That's the argument I've always made as well, is that it's, you know, the steroids aren't going to make you a better hitter. They're going to make what you hit go further. They certainly are, but they're not going to make you a better hitter. They're not going to make you a better ball player. And in some instances, they may actually slow you down a little bit, depending on, you know, what you're taking them for and how you're working yourself out and all that kind of stuff. Now, McGuire was a notorious workout fiend. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he was always going to be a larger individual, but he learned how to manage that. Once again, not giving them any license whatsoever to say that what they did was right, because it was illegal at the time as far as, you know, steroids were concerned, maybe not necessarily in baseball, but legally it was illegal. And yeah, everybody else was doing it. So I need to stay ahead of the game. I get the argument behind it, but the right behind it is not there as well. It was a different era. And that's kind of what, actually, it's great that we are talking about this, because it kind of leads me into my question about the lockout that's going on. Because the only reason the steroid era really blew up was because of that lockout and strike in 94, 95 that essentially almost killed baseball. And it was that home run race of 98 that really kind of sparked the game's love again. It was the lockout then was different because it was in the middle of the season. It canceled the World Series, and people were really pissed off about that for good reason. This is different in the sense that this is the off season, and maybe it cuts into a bit of spring training. But outside of that, it feels like hopefully this is going to get done before and not cancel any of the season. But is there any comparison between those two lockouts? Because this is the first lockout since 94, 95. Are there any comparisons that we can glean from that? And is there any chance that some repercussions that we saw in 94, 95 could still pop up in this lockout?
I mean, I don't think so. The big thing, like you said, was that one happened, you know, right around the All-Star. It was right after the All-Star break, and it wiped out the postseason of the World Series. The World Series had never been missed. I mean, even during World War II, World War I, they still played the World Series. The first time it had ever happened, you know, people were upset about it. You know, if we get to the point where, you know, the season doesn't happen and, you know, we're in July and they're still fighting over money, then, yeah, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to go away and say, I'm never coming back. But until you get to that point, I don't think you're going to – I mean, again, you know, it's right now, it's just the off season, and, you know, I don't think a lot of people are really thinking about it all that much, to be totally honest with you, especially with the holidays and everything. Everybody's like, okay, they're telling us that they're going to be back in February. We'll see you in February.
Well, there's no talks, no meetings, anything scheduled. Now, granted, it is the holiday season, like you said. So in about 2 or 3 weeks, everything was going to shut down anyway for the holidays, run through the first of the year. So it's not like probably much was going to be made headway-wise anyway during this next month or so. And it looks like things are going to pick up again probably somewhere in the early to mid-January timeframe, which will likely affect the Cardinals' winter warm-up, which is something that lots of people were looking forward to this year. Us included, for many reasons, but mainly because of the fact it would have been something normal that we had missed kind of the last year or so, you know, getting a chance to interact with players and other fans and stuff like that in an environment that is happy and conducive to fun. So we'll see how that plays out, but it really comes down to just making sure everybody's able to get into camp at a good time and get themselves ready, because we talked about this last week as well. You don't want to go into a season with about a week of preparation and then expect good things to happen. I mean, it's going to take a little while for guys to get set and in rhythm and all that. So you want to make sure that they have enough time to do that and actually have a good productive start to the season. Otherwise you might lose fans just because of the poor product on the field.
Yeah. And you know, it's so weird how this all works. You know, I was reading an article the other day, you know, and you know, obviously with the lockout, players aren't able to work with coaches or be around the organization. Unless you're not on the 40-man roster.
Yeah. Nice.
Because people like Juan Yepes, people like Matthew Liberatore, people that are on the 40-man roster can't be around coaches, can't do training. You know who's in Jupiter hitting the crap out of the ball right now because he can be around everybody because he's not on the 40-man roster?
Nolan Gorman
is in Florida right now tearing the cover off the ball because he can spend every day at Cardinal Camp and talk to coaches and work out and work with Jose Oquindo, work with hitting coaches, you know. So do you think Nolan Gorman's going to be ready when spring training rolls around, knowing that he gets this all this time that nobody else does? with the coaching staff, with, you know, with the facilities to be ready. I mean, it's just crazy how that works. So all the 40 man roster guys can come work out, but anybody on the 40 man roster cannot be around the organization.
Interesting. I wonder now, looking at what happened as soon as the lockout hit with, you know, all the teams scrubbing players from their websites and all that kind of stuff. It also makes you sit back and go, okay, I can maybe see why the Cardinals and other teams didn't move some of these guys from the non-roster to the 40-man if they knew this was coming. You know, maybe some teams like the Cardinals had that foresight to go, look, we know what's going to happen. We don't want to admit it. We hope it doesn't happen. But we're going to give guys like Gorman and Yepes and guys like that the opportunity to still be able to be ready for the season by not putting them on the 40-man roster until this thing is resolved. Now, there's other things like service time and stuff like that that may play into it as well. But that's something that's going to have to be resolved in the CBA too. But they had to have been thinking about that when they were making 40-man roster decisions.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that was definitely part of it. And so, you know, those guys should definitely be ready. Nolan Gorman, going to get lots and lots of time to work out and be ready. And then real quickly, before we jump back to college football, because we got to talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even with everything going on and players not able to talk and teams not able to talk, you're still hearing rumors about this team's talking to this guy, this team's talking to that guy. What do you think of the rumors that Carlos Correa may be going to Chicago to the Cubs?
That would be insane. I mean, it would be an upgrade over over Baez, who, you know, was their shortstop last year until he was traded. That would signal to me that the Cubs are thinking they can go for it again this year, that they're thinking maybe the Cardinals are weak or maybe the Brewers are going to fall off a little bit, which the Brewers probably are. But, man, that would be a lot of money to tie up for a guy when you have no pitching and not much else around him.
Well, they did go get Stroman, you know, and Stroman is definitely pushing the Correa thing.
Oh, yeah, he is.
But, again, you know, they get Carlos Correa. Who's going to pitch to him? Because who's going to be behind? You're going to pitch to Carlos Correa, or are you going to pitch to, Jason Heyward? Which one of those two guys are you pitching to?
I think you're pitching to Heyward.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, Clint Frazier, who they went and signed the other day. Ooh. You know, I mean, does that scare you? But, you know, lots of rumors about the Cardinals, too. You know, apparently they had at least some conversations with Kenley Jansen, mm-hmm. which is interesting. Tells you that they really are talking about upgrading the back end of their bullpen, or at least adding another, you know, proven arm to the back of that bullpen. We know they've talked to Joe Kelly. We know they've talked to a bunch of people. So I think that's going to be the first thing they do. And then, you know, what happens with Trevor Story? You know, that's going to be big. And I don't know if you saw today, but apparently Kyle Schwarber is looking for 3 years and somewhere around $20 million, which, you know, so three years and 60, somewhere in that range is what Schwarber is looking for. So that's, you know, that's something the Cardinals can definitely afford if that's the left-handed bat they think they want to target, you know, especially with the DH and everything. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when we do get back to business as usual, which will happen. You know, it may not happen for another 8 weeks or so, but it's going to happen. And, so, you know, there is baseball to talk about. But before we get out of here, we've got to talk about college football and the playoffs and the rankings. And I don't understand.
I mean, I don't, but I do at the same time. You know, Alabama, the big win in the SEC championship game against Georgia, vaults them to number one over Michigan, who blew out Iowa in the Big Ten. Here's why I say that I get it. The NCAA does not want a rematch of the SEC championship in the first round of the or in the semifinals of the college football playoff. Alabama has to jump ahead of Georgia because they beat them in the biggest game of the year. I get that. I don't think you could sit there and say that Cincinnati being undefeated is better than a one-loss Georgia team that lost the SEC championship, albeit as badly as they did to Alabama. So it almost felt like that it had to play out this way. Not to sit there and say that, you know, you're not going to see an SEC championship rematch anyway, because it's very possible you're going to see Alabama-Georgia in that final game. But I get why they went that direction. I don't like it. I don't think it's great. I think a team like Michigan probably should be number one and should have that right to be the top team. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. How does an undefeated Michigan team that blew out Ohio State, not the number one team in the country, And then if wins and losses matter, how can you tell me that two one-loss teams are better than Cincinnati, who's undefeated? Plus, you know, and I know they think they want to see the whole thing is they want Georgia, Alabama in the national championship game. I don't want to see that again. I don't have any interest in seeing that again. I'd much rather see that in the first round and get it over with and have somebody else in the championship game than two SEC schools. You know, hopefully Michigan, it would be amazing. I don't think it'll happen. It'd be amazing if Cincinnati could pull off the upset.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm just sick of the SEC schools, honestly, especially Alabama. I'm just tired of seeing it, and I think a lot of people are. And I think you may see – I think you may see if it's a championship game between Georgia and Alabama, the ratings might not be as great as everybody thinks they are just because people are tired of seeing it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I don't know what the viewership was for the SEC championship game. I know it was still a very large amount of people watching, but – I mean, Alabama just destroyed Georgia, and we thought going into this that Georgia was probably the best team in the country. They had done everything that they needed to do this year. Alabama barely beat Auburn the week before, so you're thinking, okay, they're down a little bit. Georgia's going to come out and just easily handle them. But Nick Saban knew what he was getting into, and he had his team prepared and ready to go, and that's why Bryce Young is in the Heisman finalist committee. You know, he 421 yards, 3 touchdowns in that championship game. So he's back in the Heisman conversation. He's actually the consensus winner for a lot of people, which, I mean, looking at who the 4 finalists are, I can't sit there and say I blame him. I mean, C.J. Stroud with Ohio State, I mean, they didn't beat Michigan. They didn't get to the Big Ten championship game. I don't know if you can consider him a Heisman favorite. You had Kenny Pickett, QB at Pitt. Once again, you know, a guy kind of outside the cycle, not really going to get a whole lot of consideration despite having an ACC record 43 touchdowns and playing very, very well in his 5th year as a senior quarterback. And then you got Aiden Hutchinson out of Michigan. And honestly, can you tell me the last time a defensive player won the Heisman?
Charles Woodson.
So there you go. Yeah, from Michigan. I mean, Hutchinson, obviously great, 14 sacks this year, Michigan record. Had a big game against Ohio State when it mattered, but, I mean, there's no way that a quarterback's not going to win it this year. I think you're right. I think just no one wants to see Alabama-Georgia again in a potential championship game. With that being said, though, what Alabama did to Georgia does give Michigan a blueprint to beat them. And if you get pressure on their quarterback, which obviously Hutchinson can do, Michigan has a real good chance of beating Georgia. And I think they very well could. Are you at all intrigued by an Alabama Michigan final?
Yeah. I mean, I think Michigan, I think Michigan's going to make it to the final game. That game would be interesting just because you don't see that matchup, and that's two powerhouse schools that don't really play each other often. So yeah, I would be interested in watching that. Real quickly, here's a trivia question for you. You said a quarterback's definitely going to win. The year Charles Woodson won the Heisman, I'm sure you don't know this, but the other two finalists, both Hall of Famers, both huge names. One of them, wide receiver, the freak, Randy Moss. The other guy that he beat, pretty good quarterback. Some guy named Peyton. Peyton Manning was the other one that Charles Woodson beat out to win the Heisman Trophy.
That's right. I completely forgot about that.
Yep.
Holy cow. Yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a season.
That's a hell of a Heisman class. That's probably the best Heisman class there's ever been.
No question. I think it probably is the best Heisman class that there's ever been. Like you said, 3 Hall of Famers. I mean, that right there should tell you all you need to know. So you got those big games coming up with the national semifinals coming up a little bit later in January. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Those are going to be some fun games, though. I mean, I'm really hoping that Cincinnati does give Alabama a bit of a run. I don't know how much of a run they're going to give them, but I'd love to see them push Alabama to the limit, and it would really give those Power 5 conferences a little bit of a chest bump if they're able to do that. Real quickly, just talk a little bit about college basketball. I know we still haven't really touched a whole lot on that as the season is still relatively early on, but Illinois gets a big win tonight in Iowa, an 87-83 victory. That's a team that you're going to have to watch out for this year. Illinois is going to be sneaky good, I think.
Yeah, they should still be good. They'll make a run. You know, last year was probably their year, should have been their year, but they'll be a top 10 type team, I believe.
And SLU, okay, with them not having some players there this year that, you know, due to injury and things like that, they're winning games. You know, they're winning games. They play Creighton tomorrow night. I think they're ranked in the top 70 in the NET rankings to start the season, which is, I think, the highest ranking, at least under Travis Ford, if not the last couple of seasons as well. They have a real solid team this year. And, you know, we saw Fred Thatch when he was down in Sykeston. He's a guy that hopefully will get a chance to get some more action this year. But SLU is another one of those teams that can be very, very dangerous. And for those of you disheartened with the Mizzou program right now and maybe can't stand to watch them play or anything like that, I implore you to look closer to home and look at SLU. And you don't have to mutually be exclusive to one or other of the other teams. You know, they're not in the same conference or anything like that. They very rarely, if ever, play each other. You know, you can support both teams, but I would dare you to go out there and watch a SLU game and not be entertained.
Yeah, no, the Billikens are going to be really solid. You know, it's just a shame that they lost Javonte Perkins, who was the preseason A-10 player of the year. You know, if they would have had him, they probably would have been a top 25 team all year. They still could be. I mean, there's enough talent on that team that they're going to be right there. I mean, if not for COVID last year, they would have been. Who knows what that team would have done last year if COVID had knocked them down. But, yeah, they're going to be really, really good. There's a ton of talent on that team. And, yeah, they'll be fun to watch, you know, especially as you get, you know, into AT ball, AT conference ball, and AT. A-10 is what I'm trying to say. Apparently words don't come out of my mouth right now. Yeah, A-10 conference ball will be fun to watch. And then real quickly, how weird is it that we get into December 22nd and the Bragging Rights game and the Mizzou football bowl game both on the same day? Although there's a lot of people that don't want to watch either one of them, so.
Yeah. I know. I saw that too, and it's like, you know, it's like a double kick to the nuts if you're a Mizzou fan, because they're both playing on the same day, right around the same time, and you really don't want to watch either game. Like, I mean, what are you gonna do? Hopefully, Mizzou basketball can kind of turn it around a little bit and really give Illinois a run for their money. Now, those games have been really good, regardless on who has been better. I believe didn't Mizzou win the game last year, and
they did.
They weren't also great at that point in time as well. So don't discount what the Tigers or the Illini can do in that game, because it is a truly rivalry game. You know, they both teams get up for it, and I'm interested to see how Mizzou football does against that triple option of Army. It's definitely going to be an intriguing game for sure, and one that has a little bit more history than I think people realize. I think that Mizzou Army history is a little bit more complex than people just looking at it going, oh, it's Army. Dig a little bit deeper. Those are going to be some interesting things you're going to find out.
Yeah, the last time Mizzou, I will say the last time Mizzou played Army in that triple option, it didn't go real well a few years ago. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. And then, you know, the Spencer Rattler to Columbia rumors continue to grow and get bigger and bigger. So it'll be interesting to see if that ends up happening. I mean, he would definitely have some weapons to throw to next year if he comes to Mizzou. So we'll see.
Well, and everything that Coach Drink has said leading up to the practices this week is it seems like he does not believe he has a quarterback in his system right now that can run the program that he wants it run like. So I expect a full court press on Mr. Rattler if that's what Coach Drink wants. And I would not put it beneath him to be able to find a way to recruit him to Mizzou. I mean, we saw it wasn't necessarily him that brought Kelly Bryant in, but you know, Kelly Bryant coming to Mizzou was a big deal as well. And
although, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Okay.
I think as far as an actual quarterback passing the ball, throwing the ball, Spencer Rattler definitely way more talent than Kelly Bryant ever had. And yeah. I mean, it makes sense in a lot of ways when you look at the fact that Mizzou's got the two really good young freshman quarterback coming in next year. To have Rattler there for a year or two to let them kind of grow and build and then have them ready, you know, in his sophomore and junior years to step in and be ready to be the starters kind of behind him. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes, but definitely some interesting rumors coming out of Columbia right now.
Well, and what does that say about not only the Mizzou program, but also the Oklahoma program that's getting ready to join the SEC, that a guy of Rattler's caliber would even entertain the idea of leaving Oklahoma with the monetary value behind the Sooners program and what they possibly could do. And going to a Mizzou program that has been in the SEC for a while, kind of knows how the SEC runs and all that kind of stuff, has the talent level that we think they're going to have for the next couple of years. I mean, that just shows you right there that almost feels like, I'm not going to say Mizzou is ahead of Oklahoma, but at least when it comes to SEC football terms, they might be getting viewed as a team that is ahead of Oklahoma when it comes to football.
Oh, and, you know, he's seeing guys like Luther Burden and some of those kids that are coming in the next couple of years going, okay, I can play with that, you know, and we'll see. And, you know, again, Coach Drink, and he's seeing all these 4- and 5-star prospects saying, yeah, we'll go to Columbia, you know. And so they're kind of the snazzy pick right now for team guys that are looking to – snazzy, there's a word for you. they're kind of the darling of recruits and transfers right now, so – yeah, it's definitely fun to have Mizzou, you know, talked about in those terms, to have big time talent wanting to come to Columbia.
Yeah, very, very true. And on that old person word note, snazzy, I think it's also past our bedtimes as well here at 10:06. So we're going to take off tonight. Anything else you got to say before we head out?
No, I've used my old people words for the day, so I'm ready to go to bed now.
Oh, same here. Well, big action tomorrow night. Blues taking on Florida. You got SLU playing Creighton. And also, don't forget, later this week, surprising, Illinois women volleyball upset Kentucky, defending national champion on Saturday. They're going to be in action later this week as well as they try to make their way further into the college volleyball tournament as well. So make sure you check that out. Lots of great volleyball action there as well. We'll keep an eye on that as we go on later this week. Action gets underway on Thursday through Sunday, so make sure you check that out as well. We'll be back with you guys on Wednesday night to recap the Blues game, to recap what's going on in the NFL, any more news that may pop up in the MLB in regards to the lockout, and anything else that may pop up in the world of sports. So for Scott, I am Wags. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. Have a great rest of your evening, and have a great week until we see you again on Wednesday.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.